This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor at WorldSweeper.com, and as part of our National Pavement Expo 2009 coverage, I have Don Turner on the phone with me. Good morning, Don.
How are you this morning?
Doing good. Hey, Don is, this is a great guy to have on tape and to listen to. For those of you who'd like to have more business, Don is the owner of Pavement Web Services. He has attended the National Pavement Expo for over 20 years and has been a speaker in 12 of the last 13 years. And he talks on marketing basics, but certainly also marketing details, and has one of the higher-rated seminars perennially at NPE. And we'll give you the contact info at the end again, but his website is pavementweb.com, and email is admin@pavementweb.com. So, Don, we've known each other a long time, too, and so we know that we both have information on this topic that can help contractors. Let's talk about specifically, what should a contractor do in this kind of economy that we're in a downturn, competition's tight, you know, you have to cut back on expenses or think you have to do that. What should the sweeping contractor and pavement contractor do in this economy that maybe weren't so important in an up economy?
Well, I would think mainly now a contractor needs to be very flexible, and they need to be very in tune with what's happening with their customers, their past customers, current customers. That will also give them some insight on what their future customers' situations would be. For example, if a current sweeping customer was having some budget cuts or some issues, then you could pretty well bet that that's happening to other people in the same position that you might not be working for yet. So that could change the way that you would approach them, letting them know that you understand the changes that are taking place, I guess you'd say, in their world. And mainly letting them know that you understand where they are at and what's happening you know, in their business, in the position they're in as a property manager or a property owner or, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, in this very unpredictable economy.
Right. That's very good advice, to be able to sit in their shoes, and that allows you to say the words that they need to hear, and that's very critical. And to get to that position, one of the things I might add in there is to listen. It's more important than ever to listen to what your prospects and your customers have to say, whether it's positive or negative. And if it's negative, use that as an opportunity to do what it is they want to hear or they want to see you do.
I would agree entirely, and I would say that that's one mistake that many people make that are not experienced salespeople. They talk too much and listen too little. And what you want to do is ask leading questions, like of your current clients. You might stop by for a visit with one of your current clients or with several of your current clients and just ask them leading questions. Are there any things changing with your business this year? How's this economy affecting your maintenance budgets? Questions like that, and then sit back and let them tell you what their problems are. And that will give you a better insight. You may have to, you know, go home and think about this later, but it will give you a better insight on how to approach future customers as well as how to keep your current customers, you know, satisfied and to retain them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very, very good. And how do you see that your advertising might change in a down economy like this?
Well, I would say that it makes your website presence more important than ever. Your online presence, of course, I've always said in my marketing seminars that there's no better value for the money than a website, because once you have the website built, your cost is going to be maybe $10 a month for maintaining this as far as your hosting charges. And then, you know, if you have a good website designer, they will make changes for you, you know, inexpensively. So you can adapt what's on your website very quickly if your customers, for example, tell you of some new things that are happening. This is what's happening with their budgets. This is what's happening in their world. You can change some of the content on your website to reflect that you understand that your company is experienced and ready to deal with those situations. And so, you know, there's no other form of advertising. I'll use the Yellow Pages, for example. Once you're in there for a year. You can't change anything. So, you know, that's a place where I certainly wouldn't put much money. But on your website, you can change that. And in this economy, who knows? You might have to change it two or three times just this year alone. We don't know what's going to happen with this stimulus program and all of the different things they're doing. There's just really no telling where the economy's going to go. So it's important to be flexible, and a website allows you that flexibility to make changes and let your potential customers know that you are, you know, up to date with what's actually happening.
And that's a critical aspect. I couldn't agree more that not only is it inexpensive, but it's sitting there 24 hours a day. And of course, you have a brochure, so put your brochure onto the website, and you have whatever handouts that you're using in your business, and you know, finding a way to put those onto your site and giving the person that's looking at your website as much information as they have or as they can get, then their questions will be a lot better to you when they do call you, and they won't take up as much of your time and
well,
so forth.
Well, and another thing that I always like to point out, this is a kind of a crude example, but you know, with any other form of advertising, there is a sales resistance. We've all had the feeling of being in a store, just looking at an item. We're not thinking about buying it. We're just checking it out. It's something we haven't seen before. We're just kind of shopping, and you see a salesman coming out of the corner of your eye, and subconsciously you put up a wall because you know this guy is fixing to try to sell you this item that you don't really want to buy right then. With a website, your customer may be looking at you in his office. He may be looking at your website at 10 o'clock at night from his home, sitting in his underwear drinking a beer.
Yep.
And if he's doing that, he has absolutely no sales resistance. So he will get 100% of the message that you are conveying on your website, and that's why you want to make sure that message you know, is the right one. And I will point out in what you're saying about brochures, it's certainly important to have that information there where it can be linked to. But on your home page, the main thing to do is convey the fact that your company provides these services, and have something that is interesting enough about your company and that would show people that you're geared to today's economic situation, you're on top of things, that would catch their interest enough to get them to follow your other links and go to your other pages. In the web business, we call it the 8-second rule. The average visitor will give your website 8 seconds to catch their interest. If you catch their interest in that first 8 seconds of reading, then they will stay, and they will look at your other pages, and they'll look at your other information. If the first 8 seconds doesn't have anything that catches their attention or makes them curious, then you may very well lose them. They might click off and go to another website.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. What other things might we talk about here? One, I would think that we should sure touch on, because my main expertise is the sweeping area. However, as those who follow World Sweeper know, I push the sweeping contractors to think about expanding horizontally into the other pavement-related markets that you know so well. What would you have to say about that, and perhaps in combination with going back to your existing sweeping customers? That's an advantage that a sweeping contractor has, and maybe the reason to go pay $70,000 for one of today's twin-engine sweepers is that you're on the property now 3 to 5 to 7 nights a week, and how could somebody else get the striping job or the seal coat job or the pothole patching job and so forth away from you if you're doing a good job? And what do you think? Should that sweeping contractor be, is this a good time for him to be branching out or to look at those kinds of things?
Well, I would give it two criteria. The first one would be, can you do it without going into a bunch of debt? I don't think anybody needs to be, you know, in a lot of debt right now. If you're still making payments on your sweeper and things like that, I wouldn't add on a lot more debt for other types of equipment like striping equipment or something like that. However, there's a great deal of used equipment out there right now with low hours on it. It is a buyer's market. You know, if you look in these classified magazines and things like that, there are lots of good machines out there at a real bargain. So if you can afford to pick one of those up, you're certainly right about expanding horizontally. The two fields that I recommend people look at are striping, because that always has to be done. Most cities have codes for, you know, different markings of fire lanes or things like this. And, of course, there's always the ADA compliance. And a sweeper would be the first one to notice that, hey, somebody knocked down two of the handicap signs. Those are required by law. So you could replace those signs. And while you were at it, you could let them know you could handle the pavement markings also. So you can be right on top of that. The second would be infrared pavement repairs. Again, if you can get into this without, you know, going into debt for a large amount of money, there's a lot of equipment out there now. And infrared repairs are not, they are limited to certain types of repairs as far as being a permanent repair. However, they can be used for a lot of other repairs that wouldn't be permanent. This repair probably should be dug out, fully replaced, and everything like that. But in this economy, if you're a sweeper and you know your customers are more concerned by the words slip and fall than just about any other words that come to their mind, so if you see a pothole when you're sweeping, you could tell a customer, you know, we can come out with an infrared unit without disrupting your business, very short amount of time. We can repair that pothole, have everything smooth where there's no danger of anybody tripping and falling, and we can do that at, you know, X price. That price will be far lower than a conventional repair, you know, like a remove and replace repair where the area has to be cut out and excavated and a lot more machinery, a lot more overhead involved.
Right.
So that's something that you could look at either if you have a relationship with an asphalt contractor, maybe you could subcontract that out. But if you were looking at a way to expand in-house, I would think those two areas would be the best with the economy the way it is.
Well, that's very good information. And one of the things to remember is, and all of you listening that are sweeping contractors or pavement contractors should be aware of this, of exactly what is your marketing cost to acquire new customers?
I think that's, you know, that's very true. Too many people don't realize that. And so if you can get more work from the customer that you already have, then there was no marketing cost involved. There was no acquisition cost involved because you already had that customer. And then also, if you use that customer, I always, in my marketing classes, ask, the people in the classroom, how many of you, you know, occasionally, and I'll just use sweeping contractors for an example. Let's say you're a sweeping contractor. How long has it been since you ask a client, particular client, is there anything that we could be doing better for you? Anything that we perhaps may have grown complacent about or something like that? Is there any way we can do a better job for you? If there is, the customer will tell you. And if they do, then that's great. You can solve that problem right there, and that helps you retain that customer instead of him looking for someone else. It also shows him that you're very concerned about him. While you're at it, if you're doing a good job and he says, no, you know, you guys do a great job, I just think you're doing fine, then you can ask him, is there anyone else that you know who could perhaps use our services? And you don't know. These people tend to talk to other people in the same profession as they are. And they may have had a friend just last week who was griping because his sweeping contractor continually missed one area of the parking lot or never got this one thing right or didn't get the sidewalks clean, whatever it was. And if you ask, he might tell you, well, you know, I was talking to a friend the other day, and he mentioned that he might be looking for a new sweeping contractor. Okay, it took you 30 seconds to ask that question, or less, maybe only 15. It did not cost you a dime. And if you get that customer, you got him for zero acquisition cost. Only that cost of 15 to 30 seconds of your time, and then whatever time it took for you to go by and introduce yourself to him and meet with him. And so in this economy, those are the best type of customers to get. It never ceases to amaze me when I ask for that show of hands how few people in the room raise their hand. Usually only 5 or 6 people out of over 100 people in the room will raise their hand, that they do that regularly with every customer. And there's just no reason not to. It doesn't cost you anything, and the worst they can do is say, no, I can't think of anyone. And if that's the answer, well, then that's the end of that. It didn't hurt anything. So there's no reason not to ask that question.
And when you say, you know, they may look back and think, oh, yeah, this guy was talking about he was having trouble with his keeping his parking lot clean last week. Well, there's the other side of that coin is that so few service industry professionals are willing to go in and ask, what is it we could be doing better? How could we improve? That is so refreshing to customers that they're likely to remark on their next golf outing or at church next week or whatever, you know, I had something happen to me last week you just never see. My sweeping contractor came and said, what can I do to be better? And when I told him that what it was, he actually wanted to hear it. It wasn't like hearing a complaint. And there's two categories that you can put a company in. One is when they hate to hear the phone ring because they're afraid it's going to be a complaint. And the other are the smarter guys who, when they hear a complaint, they say, well, gee, boy, am I glad that he complained to me rather than just going and getting somebody else. And he transmits that new information throughout his sales team and his service team, and finds that as a way to improve his business, and now he includes it in his marketing to say, by the way, we don't do such and such, or we do, you know, these kinds of things to take advantage of that. And
well, and something most people don't realize, and this is proven fact, this isn't something I dreamed up, this is proven fact from all types of marketing studies and sales studies and things. A complaining customer is looking for mainly one thing. That is reassurance that they made the right choice when they chose you. And by asking them this question, by taking care of the complaint immediately and without question, you have just given them that reassurance. And that's all a complaining customer really wants. A complaining customer can be your best customer because, as you just said, then that customer who might have had a complaint or who might have said, well, you know, you could do this better, and then from then on you did do that better, he will mention that to other people. He will let other people know that there's something different about your company. You really do care, and if you hear a complaint or if there's any problem, you take care of it right away. And that's advertising that money can't buy.
You bet. Well, let's talk, I think we ought to touch on another free way to advertise, and certainly if you're putting it on your website or you're passing it out to your customers, is testimonials. That's another area that people, it's free, and yet a lot of people don't think to ask for testimonials.
That's true, and one thing you should always do, when you ask for a testimonial, of course, nowadays the little digital recorders you can carry in your pocket, they cost very little and they're small. You can just carry one in your pocket. And you don't have to actually play the testimonial. Of course, now it is possible to put it on the website. You could actually have the person giving the testimonial as an audio file on your site. But even if you didn't want to go to those links, a testimonial from a customer can be edited a little bit to make it a little shorter than the way they said it, but still get the point across. And then always ask their permission to put that on your website. You will find, very rarely, but sometimes corporations prohibit their property managers and things from, you know, having their name or their company
right.
name used on a website for promotional purposes. So you don't want to get anybody into trouble there. Be sure you ask for their permission. 99% of the time, they're going to say yes.
Right, but I know in the 20 years I've covered sweeping of somebody who has lost an account, they went out and promoted the fact they were sweeping one of the large entertainment centers that's that everyone knows about, and without getting permission, and they summarily fired them and got another contractor. So that's the kind of thing you need to remember. And something that I counsel with contractors when we make up their marketing material is to not put that on your brochures. I don't know how you feel about that, but I always feel when it's on a brochure or it's on a website, keep in mind that that customer may become a target for your competitors. That's not a bad thing because you'll get a lot more positive value out of the testimonial than potential negative. But if it's on your brochure and you have to throw away three boxes of brochures that you still have left because that one customer has been wooed away by a competitor, that's different than if it's on your website and you can...
And you can just delete the line.
Just delete the line. It's
yeah.
So
the
much better.
The delete key is far less expensive than throwing away an entire box of four-color brochures.
Right.
So I agree with you 100% there. Testimonials should always, I would limit them to the website. And also, you don't know, you know, it could change. You may have a testimonial for a property manager for a certain property, and he might get promoted to a different property or, you know, could have personal problems and have to resign or something like that, and suddenly that person is not the person at that property anymore. So, you know, having it on a website makes it easy to change instead of, like you said, having to throw away print materials or things of that type.
There's some other things that we might talk about that make sense to put on your website, too. For example, a lot of times people want references. And think about the things that in your company people are asking for all the time, whether they're prospects or they're customers. And if it's printed material that you're now sending out or you're faxing or you're having to drop off, I'm sure you would agree, you should always think about how you can put those on your website. And you don't necessarily have those visible on the site, but you have them uploaded so you can reference them in an email and somebody can just pull down your references, for example, if needed.
Sure, that's a great way to do it. There's as many different ways to do it as there are to design websites. But having that available is certainly important. You want the information to be there, not to where the customer gets information overload. And so that's why, you know, I think your idea is much better, and it's the way I would approach it, rather than having a page where they had to scroll down three or four pages because there's just all this information on this very long page. But let them select the things that they are interested in. Another thing you can do along the same line is kind of combine a references page with an FAQ or frequently asked questions page. And sometimes you can combine the two by saying that, you know, our client, you know, so-and-so at this property was concerned about this. We solved that problem this way. And you can, of course, title the question, well, what about this problem? And then when someone goes to the answer, they not only get the answer to how you handle that problem, they get an answer that this is how you handled it for a real live customer.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
So you can just increase the power of your frequently asked questions by adding a reference to them.
Yeah, that's a great point. How about local Google ads? What do you think that fits into your marketing situation today?
Today, I would not spend the money on them. That's a relatively new thing that Google has. Of course, Google's always looking for a way to make money. Google does have the targeted ads now, so they can, you know, target the ads. You can buy an ad in case people don't know what this is. You can purchase the ad on Google like you see when you search for things on Google, but your ad appears when people from your area search for the terms that you put into the system there. The problem with this, and where I don't advise people to do it, is it's relatively easy to get high or what we call first page listings, and mainly as long as you're on the first page of Google, you're okay. Of course, to be number one, it's best, but people put more stock in the free listings than they do the advertisements. So it's not that hard, usually, to get your web designer. If he's a good designer, he can get you into the top listings for most terms on Google. The problem with their localized search capability is it all depends on who the person uses for their internet carrier. For example, if they use AOL, all of AOL's internet addresses come from North Carolina. So someone using AOL and using Google, they will never get that localized search ad displayed to them because their IP address, which is what Google uses to determine where they're at, shows to be in North Carolina where all of AOL's addresses are located. And I believe that's the state. It's either North Carolina or Virginia, right in that area somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But and so it doesn't work. It's kind of dependent on who their internet provider is. As long as they have a local internet provider who has local addresses, let's say for the, you know, Seattle market or the Oklahoma City market or whatever market that you're in, as long as people are using an internet provider that has local addresses there, then that Google localized search works. But if not, if they use some other company that's addresses are located somewhere else or registered somewhere else, then it doesn't work. So it's kind of a hit-and-miss approach. Google promotes it a whole lot, but they don't tell you about the fact that you'll miss all the AOL customers.
Well, and that brings us to a topic we talked about a little bit offline, which you know, we were going back and forth with, well, what should we say works, what doesn't work, and your point was excellent, I thought, and it certainly fits in here. You can try Google. It's not expensive to do that. I recommend if somebody is doing a localized Google search, there's no need to be number one, but you might want to be, which is your bidding at how much you'll pay if somebody sees your Google ad and then actually clicks through to your website. So I tell my customers, you know, if you want to do that, try to be on the front page on your keywords, unless it's, you know, too expensive to do that. Localized search, it's typically you're not going to spend more than $25 a month anyway. But
and certainly you also want to use a feature Google has called Google Analytics.
Yes.
And Google Analytics will tell you how many people, you know, clicked through on that ad and actually went through to your website. That way you can get back to that cost of acquiring a customer. And, of course, that requires you to take one more step. When the phone rings or when someone emails you, you need to ask them how they found you. And if they say by a search engine, say, do you recall which one? And that way you will know if they found you through the Google localized ads or if they found you through Yahoo or some other MSN or some other search.
Right, or any other advertiser that you might use, Dex or Yellow Pages or
website,
yeah, World
Business
Sweeper
Card
or wherever.
Or anything else.
And one of the things we said was that you very appropriately said was that you have talked to people throughout the country through the years in your seminars. And, for example, thebluebook.com might be great for some people. For others, they don't get the first lead out of it. That's the key, is whatever you try is to take that extra step when the phone rings and track and map where your leads are coming from, because how else are you going to know where to spend your money?
That's correct. And I always tell people in my seminars that you must do that. If not, you're just throwing your money out there and you don't know which money is producing and which money isn't. You know, if you don't know what's actually bringing you that particular customer, it might, you know, I always tell people when you get into things like the Blue Book, these shoppers things, different local publications like that, you know, whatever it may be, even if it's membership in the local Chamber of Commerce, I use that as an example. Where I'm at, the Chamber of Commerce is as dead as it can be. I was a member there for 1 year, but it was just worthless because they're not active. They don't do anything. In other towns, I know people who've gotten a lot of business through contacts they made with the Chamber of Commerce at their, you know, breakfasts that they have and things like that. So it's basically whatever works for you when it comes to the other items like that. And you have to track them to know what's working. If you don't ask people how they found you, you don't know if you're wasting your money or if that money's actually doing it for you. In a very similar way, I'm often surprised at how many people do not check their search engine their website statistics. And any web host should have a good statistics program that will tell you how many people came to your website, what day they came on, and most importantly, it will tell you where they came from. And that will help you see, you know, what's happening and where your leads are coming from. And it can also be used to track your other marketing efforts. Let's say you do some other kind of advertising campaign. Perhaps you do a mailing campaign and you mail so many pieces out to people. In this economy, rather than mailing thousands of pieces, I suggest that people go to somewhere like Kinko's or something where you can get smaller quantities printed at a relatively good price and mail out a few hundred pieces instead of a huge volume, and then see how those pieces work. The way you can see how those pieces work is give them time to be delivered. You know, send one to yourself if you want to see how long the post office takes. But see about the time those would be being delivered to the customer. And, of course, promote your website on the printed piece.
And on every printed piece that you
and
have.
And then look at your statistics. See if the number of visits to your website increased during that time period, within the few days surrounding the mailer. And while it's not a, you know, not everyone who looks at the mailer is going to go to your website, if there's no increase at all in your website traffic after you have sent this mailer, that mailer didn't do you any good. because certainly some people are going to look at the mailer and then want more information and go to your website if they take the time to read the mailer. And so that's a good way to know that, whoops, that mailer was a waste of money. We're not going to do that again because our website visits didn't change at all. On the other hand, if your website visits shot up, even if it was only by 20 or 30 visits, that just suddenly spiked up out of the ordinary right when those were being delivered, then you know people were reading those mailers and that that was a good investment.
Very good point. And another reason I'd toss in there for sending a copy of your brochure first to yourself, especially with postcards, you'll find that the post office puts labels and marking and that sort of thing on top of your piece when they put it through the mail, and you want to make sure that that stamp that the post office is putting on or a label that they might put on for delivery isn't going across your phone number, for example, or your website.
Right, blocking out a part of your content there, that's very true.
And be sure to check with the post office for their latest sizes and prices, because it might be that you can go slightly smaller and go as a postcard rate if it's a postcard. But on the other hand, if you want to be a little bit larger where you're going to pay first class anyway, keep in mind you may be, it's quite large that you can send a postcard and still be first class, so you may want to go quite a bit bigger than you would otherwise and stand out.
Sure, that's definitely very true. I know I'm also, of course, affiliated with the National Pavement Contractors Association. And when someone joins the association, there's a packet sent out that contains, among other things, a shirt with the logo of the association on it and some other things like this. And we were taking these to the post office and mailing them the way that we thought was the cheapest, until one day a helpful post office employee said, "Do you realize if you sent these by priority mail, you would save about 25% and it would get our 25 cents and it would get there quicker?" And
great example.
That's just the way it's crazy, but that's the way the postal system works. And we could actually mail that same weight and everything, put it in a priority envelope, get it to the person quicker, and postage was about 25 cents less than the way we were sending it. And we thought we were saving money. So always ask the post office. They change all the time, too.
Yeah, and you can go to USPS.gov and see it all online. Yet one other thing to see online. Something that struck me, I thought we might talk about just real briefly, is when you say in your local area the Chamber of Commerce doesn't do any good, in other areas it does. Some people will say they want to belong to BEMA, for example, building owners and maintenance. There are a lot of associations out there that you can belong to.
Oh, sure.
And a real key, I think a lot of times people just join and put their logo on their website. Well, that will mean something to some people. But if you're going to really want to go through an organization and have a good shot at having customers from them, get involved with it. Don't just
pay your
money.
Let me give you my best example.
All right.
I mentioned this in my seminars that I give. A few years ago, one particular gentleman, their company, either he or another representative of his company, took my seminar 3 years in a row. I thought this was very unusual, so I questioned him about it. And he said one of the tips that I gave about using associations, he was located in Florida. He went back and checked, and there's a lot of condos and apartment complexes and things in the area where he serves. He found out that there was an association for condo and, multifamily property managers and such. And so he checked into membership in the association. He found out that they had two pavement contractors that were members already, but they never came. They never came to the meetings. They never did anything. They were just members. So he joined. And then he found that you could put up a small table when they had these breakfasts or luncheons, whatever they had every month or two, that as a member, he could put up a small table about the size of a card table. And so he put up a card table, and at the first one he brought, and I'm usually against these little things. I usually don't think they do any good. But this shows how different things work for different people. He took some of these little orange cones that you see and had his company name put on them, the ones that actually look like real traffic cones, but they're just small, and he had his company name put on one side, the website put on the other. And he took some of these to the breakfast, and he had some brochures about his company. He spread all this out on the little table. And those little cones got snapped up in no time. And people came over and asked him if he had more. And he said, no, I have more. I'll bring them to the next breakfast or whatever it was. And so he had an idea. And at the next breakfast, he only brought about 15 more. They went very quickly. And again, he had people asking, do you have any more of those? And he said, no, I'm sorry, I didn't bring enough, but I'll get some more. I'll bring more to the next breakfast. That kept people coming to his table. He made more contacts and now virtually dominates that segment of the market in his area, the multifamily market. He virtually dominates that. Because he took advantage of an association. All this stuff was offered to the other guys that were already members. They just weren't taking advantage of it. And he simply took advantage of it. Also, he got to have breakfast with these people, and he got to know them in a social setting on a first-name basis when he wasn't trying to sell them anything. And so then, when they contacted him about doing work for, you know, for them, he wasn't a stranger. He was someone they had had breakfast with.
Right. He was Fred or Harry or Ed.
He was somebody they knew on a first-name basis.
That's right.
And so the sale came easily. And he talked about the reason that he sent people back to attend the seminar. He said, that was just one little tiny tip in your 90-minute seminar, and it made me so much money that I wanted to make sure that we caught all the little tips in there. And I'm certainly not promoting my seminar. But it's just an example of how those, if you look in your own particular market for the opportunities that are there, it cost him very little. I don't know, a couple of $100, maybe $250, $275, something like that, to join that association. And it's brought him thousands and thousands of dollars worth of work.
That's just a wonderful point to make, and you don't have to promote your seminar. Your seminar is Cost-Effective Marketing Basics for Long-Term Success. It's every year at the National Pavement Exposition. It changes, I know, to meet the new and latest times that we're in every year, and it's just a don't miss. That's why it's always so very well attended. Each year at the National Pavement Expo.
I appreciate the flowers, but I like to tell people, you know, everything that I teach are proven marketing things that I didn't invent a single one of them. I adapted a few of them for use in the pavement industry, changed them up a little bit so that they would work for the pavement industry, but I did not, you know, change or invent any of this. None of it was because I was brilliant and came up with these wonderful ideas. These are all things that are out there in books, on sales, on marketing, on different things. I just, finished a book on the biography of Conrad Hilton. And it was interesting because a lot of the little things that made him a success later in life, when he went from a nobody in the horse and buggy days to a hotel magnate, worth millions of dollars, a lot of the things he learned, he noticed little things along the way as he was growing up and as he was involved in different businesses and different things he did. He noticed little things that appealed to people here and there, and then he combined all of those and used them in a way and adapted them to his hotel empire. And that's what a lot of pavement-related contractors, I don't care if they're sweepers, stripers, seal coaters, and all, they miss that. They fail to learn from their customers who are their best teachers. And that's what we were talking about earlier, you know, asking, is there anything we can do better? You know, what else? Is there another service we might could perform for you? You ask that question, what services would I recommend performing? Ask the customer, what else could he use?
Right. The point is that neither you nor I are going to be buying any of those services from the listener, but the customers in their market area are right now very happy to buy and need some related service to sweeping or in the pavement exterior maintenance field and find what those are.
This, but for example, someone might say, you know, I really need my sidewalks cleaned. They need a good pressure washing, but I can't find a dependable company to do it. Well, if they consider you a dependable sweeping company, then they would have no reason to think you wouldn't be a dependable power washing company.
That's exactly
so
right.
So that's another thing you could look into. You know, there's just the possibilities go on and on. And power washing is a good thing. Again, it's relatively inexpensive to get into. You know, initial cost probably less than $5,000. So, you know, not that expensive to
add. And let's face it, you need one to clean, keep your sweeper clean so your hopper doesn't rust out. So it's not like
you can kind of serve several birds with one stone.
That's right. Well, unless there's something else that you feel we should cover, this is a lot of information. Four people I know, but it's great information, and I think that was a wonderful point you made, that this is not something you made up or I made up off the seat of our pants. It's very well documented, and it's not expensive to do all of the things that we just talked about. We didn't talk about placing expensive banner ads in newspapers, and we didn't talk about placing expensive Yellow Pages ads, other than to say that's not very appropriate these days. And so these are all things that you can take out there and make more money and not cost yourself
and that
much
is
at all.
What I, going back to the first point that we talked about, this economy, the situation that our country is in, it really makes me sad to see it, but our country has gotten itself into quite a quandary. And I really turn off the news because I get sick of hearing about more layoffs and some other place closing and stocks going down or this or that or the other. But in this time, there is always room, you know, in reading Hilton's biography, he survived the Depression without ever going bankrupt and without ever ruining his credit or anything else. It was by the skin of his teeth and, as he says, with a whole lot of prayer, that he managed to do it, but he did. And so there are opportunities in tough times, but being flexible, because everything is changing just so fast, you know, with this economy. The contractor who's quick on his feet, who's flexible, and who's listening to his customers will be the one that will survive and prosper, I think, in this economy.
Yeah, there's no question that that's the case. And look for the ways that you can differentiate yourself. Look for innovation and ways to make yourself stand out, not necessarily ways that are expensive. And especially for an established contractor, where consolidation and shakeout is happening with the people who haven't been pricing well and who aren't able to keep their equipment up and keep service up and so forth, there's some definitely some opportunities. Don't listen to this gloom and doom that we're hearing when this interview was made, which is March 2009. Take the bull by the horns and hustle and be innovative, and you can come out of it very well.
And remember to always provide, no matter what the economy does or what's happening, provide the very best quality service that you can that offers the customer the greatest perceived value. And that is because it's a proven statistical fact. 80% of purchasing decisions are based on the perceived value that was received or that is gained by the purchase. And so, you know, don't just because the economy's tough or maybe gas prices will go back up or who knows what'll happen, just because those things happen, don't let your reputation or your quality suffer. Just like in the book I was reading about Mr. Hilton, he never let his name suffer. He kept his name. And that was drilled into him by his father, and it served him very well because when he came out of the Depression, he still had his good name. And a company reputation, the brand that you have created for your company, yeah, that's the same thing. Maintain that and maintain that level of quality, that level of service, and then look for new ways to, you know, continue to expand and to make money. And it's out there, and it will be.
Well, that's a great place to leave it, Don, and thanks so much for this highly valuable information. We've been talking with Don Turner. He's the owner of Pavement Web Services. They're located in Mineral Wells, Texas. His website is pavementweb.com, and you can reach him by email sent to admin@pavementweb.com. We'll have that information, of course, with the article as well. And thanks so much for your time, Don, and I look forward each year to the discussions we have at the National Pavement Expo.
Well, I do too, Ranger. It's good to hear from you, and I'm glad to try to be of any help that I can to contractors. You know, I never mind, of course, sometimes I'm busy and can't take all day, but I never mind spending a few minutes with someone, you know, trying to help someone out who is struggling or who maybe is stuck on a point or something like that to get a different viewpoint on something. Sometimes it helps just to bounce an idea off of somebody else and see what they have to say. And, you know, so I'm always glad to do that. And it was a pleasure speaking with you today. And I hope some of the people who hear this interview gain from it and profit from it.
All right. Well, thanks so much. And I want to make the point also that for those longer conversations and longer-term needs, Don also does marketing consulting and is great with pavement-related websites. So thanks again, Don.
All right. Thank you, Ranger.